thanks very much for doing this, man.
Not a problem. Cheers.
Appreciate it. So we've got our first professional sportsman on the podcast. It's a big moment. And you just signed for San Antonio FC in the States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Must be it's the fulfillment of a lifelong goal, I imagine. It's taken a lot of hard work and many, many years to get there. Now to finally realized a full professional contract for an open men's sports team. Must be a quite a proud moment.
Yeah, definitely. Very happy to eventually sign that contract and get it all done. But it's took a lot of hard work, a lot of dedication, and started this journey when I was maybe like 9 years old, and it's took us this long to get there. But I've had a lot of ups and downs, and with the system and how everything works with academy football and in England. I finally actually got my first professional contract with Sheffield Wednesday. But then, you know, things didn't really work out. So that was a kind of a dip in that journey. And then finally ended up moving over to the US to play at university, and then done really well for them 4 years at university. And then thankfully got noticed, and now I'm in the USL and in America. So,
a lot of people probably see professional footballers and see the big wages that that they get paid on the on the main sort of the Premier League and what have you. And they don't realize, firstly, the risk and the gamble that most people take when they start out with that endeavor, and they don't realize the hard work, the emotional highs and lows, and that you've got to put into it to succeed. It must have been quite an interesting and crazy life that you lived. We'll start. You went over to America to play for University High Point University.
Yep.
And you were the captain of that team. You played centre back, right?
Yep, that's correct. Yeah, so I ended up going over there after, like I just mentioned before, kind of a difficult spell after getting released by Sheffield Wednesday. Didn't really have any other options in England to play. I was only 19, 20 at the time. So was kind of thinking, what's next? What's the next option? Because I still had this desire to be a professional footballer. So around that time, I was getting a bit sick because I was getting told that I wasn't experienced enough. I wasn't tall enough. I was getting a lot of setbacks.
You're not tall enough.
Yeah,
like six foot two.
Yeah, I wasn't at the time. I was pretty short. So a lot of people had a lot of question marks whether I was going to do it or not. A lot of doubters. But I always believed in myself, and thankfully I got the opportunity to go and study in America and play football as well. I always wanted to push myself and kind of do something that I'm not used to, kind of push myself out of my complacent zone, I guess. And once I got that opportunity to go to America, I just kind of jumped at it and thought, why not?
So how did the opportunity come about?
It's kind of complicated. So when I was playing in Sheffield, I had like video footage of me playing over the 3-4 years I was there. And then basically I passed that on to a company. There's a company called Pass for Soccer. It's based out of England, but they get in touch with players that have played in England at like different academies and that are interested in going to America. They then put that video footage on a website. US college coaches will then go on that website and look and say, you know, maybe we like that player, we'll give him a scholarship offer. And at the time I had quite a lot of offers from different universities, but High Point University was the one that really kind of stressed that they wanted me. You know, they really, really wanted me, and they would talk to me like every other day and show me the campus, and they really sold the dream to me. So I was like, yeah, it seems pretty amazing.
So how did they describe the opportunity?
Well, kind of, you know, 4 years, a free education as well.
That's, yeah.
So it didn't really take much, much convincing, really. So I was kind of sold from then, and then they like FaceTimed me and showed me all the campus, and it's a beautiful campus. It's pretty amazing. So like seeing that, and like I say, the 4 years education and playing football at a pretty high standard, and the potential to then move on and play professional after in the US, that whole package, I guess, was just like something that I thought I can see myself doing.
The whole college system there is completely different to ours in terms of the culture. Everyone lives on campus at it's in North Carolina, isn't it?
Yes, North Carolina. So the closest city is like Charlotte. It's about an hour away.
Okay, so you're really quite insular with the university. It's just the whole community is just based around the university then.
Yeah, it's an interesting setup in High Point University. So the university itself is a private university, and it's not like any other university. It's very wealthy, and a lot of the students there have come from a very, very wealthy background, but the families are owners of massive companies. So
the facilities and what have you must have had access to have been incredible.
Yeah, I mean, the facilities for sport were pretty impressive, but the whole university is just unbelievable. I mean, if you ever get a chance to just even just look it up and you see there's like 7 different pools, like outdoor pools for students to use, and there's maybe like 3 or 4 different gyms, and it's like top of the range, you know, everything's it's amazing. So
do they have a specialism for football, or is it all sports that they try and attract players for?
They don't actually have an American football team, which is quite unusual for a college team. They have basketball, which is their biggest attraction, because that's kind of America's second biggest sport, really. So they're like the main team, but then soccer's pretty much the second team.
Nice.
So they offer like a lot of different sports, like lacrosse and volleyball and all these different sports. But yeah, it's definitely grown. Soccer's definitely grown out there. So the college system is kind of like our academies. So obviously in university here, we don't really have that much of a competitive sporting environment. There's not many teams that are at a high level.
It's mostly club-based, though.
So you're in England, you're either in an academy and then you progress from the academy to a first team.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in America, they do have academy systems, but a lot of players choose to go to university to get that education as well, so to fall back on.
Yeah, okay.
But then from college, once you finish your 4 years, you can potentially go to the MLS through the draft system, just exactly the same as the NFL, the NBA, and other professional leagues in America.
So how does the draft system work? If you just explain it at a really high level, just for people who don't know.
So the draft system...
Oh, is that a picture of the university? That looks insane.
Yeah, there's like 7 different pools that are like that.
Is that the pool you showed me?
No, that's a different one. Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, that's
a stadium.
Vert Stadium, yeah.
I mean, it couldn't have been a hard decision to go, could it? Look at that place.
People couldn't believe it when I got there that I went without like actually visiting the university. And I was like, are you joking me? Like, look at the pictures. I saw like 3 photos. I was like, yep, sign me up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I bet you couldn't believe
is there anything you want to look up in particular? It has its own cinema.
I mean, you can kind of see
that's insane.
From that.
We went, I don't know how this is going to bring up. It has its own on-site steakhouse.
No.
Yeah.
And so the point of it is they have students go. How many do you get? You get like a pass a semester or something?
You get a student card, which you have a meal plan on the student card, and then you have 17 meals, and then like 7 of those are called magic meals. It's pretty ridiculous, but they're called magic meals, and you're allowed 7 of those, so that's for a week.
Mm.
And you're allowed to go to the steak restaurant.
It's for a week?
Once a week, yeah.
Wow.
And you've got to just like go online, and you've got to like basically schedule to get in because it's that busy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like really nice. You can go like once a week to places like that. And
the whole principle behind this steakhouse one is to teach like proper eating etiquette. So like while you're eating, the guy will come around, like the waiter will come around and be like, oh, you've got your knife in the wrong place, or
got you, like, that's interesting. So when
your drip plate's gonna be below this one. So essentially when you go out to speak to clients with the inevitable high flying job you're gonna get, you know how to kind of react. It's weird. Like I wasn't really meant to be there,
yeah,
because that's what it's for. But I got like in on his card, and the guy was coming around like telling me, and I was like, I'd do this anyway. Like I've been for meals with, that's fine.
So for reference, Jack is and Johnny, your brothers.
Jack
went
that.
Out there.
Yeah, should probably let people know that.
I was going to try and keep it quiet, and then we've got a big shot on the podcast without using any contact. But no, yeah, Jack and Johnny are our brothers, and Jack went out there for it was a couple of weeks or so, about a year ago.
3 weeks, yeah. We went. I went just before you went on spring break, so I spent like a week at the university, and then we drove down to Florida, did spring break, and I was back for, I don't know, a few days, and then flew home. But yeah, everything you're saying about the university, it doesn't really, the pictures look cool, but the size of it, like how grand it is, you don't really see until you get there. It
doesn't really do it justice. No, just not really. Pictures. Yeah. When you get there, it's like...
And the people there, your classmates and that sort of thing?
So, do you mean like the people that are kind of...
Yeah, did you get on well with them? Were they nice people? What was that like socially? Integrating with a completely different
it was
nationality type people and also people who are very, very well off.
Yeah, it was difficult. I mean, like when I first went over there, I like connected well with the team because, you know, everyone plays soccer there, so you've got something in common.
Are most of the people that you played on your team from, were they Americans that had got in on bursaries or scholarships, or were they on kind of footballing merits?
It's kind of a mix. So you have players from the likes of Ghana. You have like, we have like three Ghanaian players, Iceland, Colombia, like all from all over the world. Mm-hmm. That are on scholarship that get brought in.
Okay.
And you have some Americans that are on scholarship, but maybe not as much scholarship because they know that they've got a little bit of money to pay for the scholarship there, so they can
like subsidize.
Can do that. Sorry. Yeah. So a lot of internationals don't have the like finances to just be like, yeah, sure, he has $50,000. However much, you know, much money it is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's like a mix of Americans and international players. But I kind of stuck with the soccer team throughout my time there because I thought found it pretty difficult to socialize with anyone outside of that athletic bubble.
Okay.
So other people on different teams, such as lacrosse, baseball, track and field, you know, they were pretty easy to get along with because they were from kind of similar backgrounds as me, some of them, because they have an athletic scholarship. So with they have an athletic scholarship, they don't have the amount of money to pay crazy.
I got you. Yeah, and then because they'll be from other parts of the world, they're experiencing this new university as well. So and I imagine as well they're probably drinking less, partying less than the other guys because you are effectively a professional sportsman.
I guess so. I mean, you'd like to think that, but there is, you know, we do go out and enjoy ourselves. We would go out as a team. I'd say maybe like a couple of times a month or something, and we'd go out and kind of get together, and some players would go out more than others. Some people are more serious about going to play professionals, some aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the rules I found pretty difficult with being captain of the team, I kind of had to set standards. So I'm trying to set a standard for the team and saying, listen, we can't go out this week, guys. We've got a big game coming up. And I've got half the team buying into that, and then I've got some people that are just like, yeah, I'm just going to go and get smashed. So
but you can't go out and get smashed.
Exactly. Support, I mean, I was someone that had to set the standard, but you've got some of the... Towards the end, some of the senior players were just never really playing in the team, and they were like, yeah, well, I'm not going to live the life of a professional, which I understand. Yeah, you want to go and have fun and go and drink and party.
They're at university.
But you've got senior players that are doing that, and then you've got young freshmen that are coming at the team that I'm trying to like get on this, like, you know, this is the standard, pretty much. And then they're looking to the older guys and be like, well, if they're doing it, why should I do it?
Were you captain from the first year that you were there?
No, I was captain of my junior and senior year, so my last 2 years.
Okay.
I had two other captains that were like really good before me, like really good guys. So I kind of had the opportunity to learn from them and see how they'd done things and took little leaves out of their book and then kind of applied my own stamp on it as well when I was like my junior and senior, like I say. But I really enjoyed it. It was something that was challenging, like something I'd never really done before. But very happy I did do it because it's just something that improves you as a person, right? I mean, you just end up dealing with different situations. You've got to manage people. You've got to learn how to speak to people that, you know, you may be able to speak to someone in a nicer way and you might get a good reaction out of him, but then some people you might have to give a little bit of a bollocking to and they respond differently. So you just little things like that. Yeah, yeah.
That kind of man management techniques. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll go a long way throughout your career, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. So super I'm really valuable. Pleased I got the chance to do that.
No, it sounds like an amazing opportunity. You grabbed it with both hands and made it work for you. So I want to go back to when you were a child playing football, I don't know, 5-6 years old. At what point did you realise that this was firstly something you wanted to do, but probably more importantly something you could do? So I read a lot of like sporting autobiographies and they always gloss over that bit and then they realise that they were super talented and they could be like a professional athlete. Do you remember there was a moment when you like, oh, I could do this?
I wouldn't say there's like a moment I was like, right, you know what I mean, like a kind of a eureka moment I was like, right, this is the time, I know I'm good enough. It was just kind of through my dad's belief in me is that when I was young and people telling me, like, you're pretty good at this. And I was like, yeah, I'm doing pretty well. And started out just playing for like a local, you know, like a boys club, grassroots football. And then
for context, I'm 2 years older than you. Well, two football and like team years above him. And we always used to like, he played with my friends, like just kicking around in the street and stuff. And as a result, like improved way faster than people of his own age group, and then like he just outgrew his actual team and then began to play for mine. Like right. 2 years, but obviously 2 years at like six, seven years old to like nine.
It's a big jump.
Yeah, yeah, it's like you physically a lot bigger, but he like was technically good enough to like just be like, oh, okay, I'll just run around you anyway. So
yeah, so that's kind of where I started, but it was interesting actually. So the reason how I got into the academy system was when I was maybe around eight or old you around that time.
It's really young, isn't it?
Yeah,
really,
it was. Really young. It wasn't actually the academy. It was called a development center at the time. So basically, they pick players that are talented at that age, and we'll train you for a few years and see if you can then go onto the academy. I did that, but you get selected by. We got selected.
There's a thing that comes around to. Well, I don't know if it still happens, but it used to. It was called Football in the Community, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And like some academy coaches come to a primary school, and they do like just like training sessions, and you play games. And the idea is to pick if they like the look of anyone, then they'll pick them and they'll go to the academy for like a trial basis sort of thing.
Yeah.
I got picked. Johnny like indefinitely got picked, and I was like being looked at, but I like got ill at the time, and then it didn't really work out. But like that was. I still think about it most days.
If you hadn't got ill,
I couldn't go back. I basically couldn't go back to the final like two sessions because I was off school.
Yeah.
But then like that rest is history for Johnny. Like he went to. I'll let you talk about it.
Yeah. So I went on from that point. Signed for Newcastle's academy when I was like nine.
Must be like obviously your dream because that's your club you support, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm like Newcastle mad. Like been to two of the games since I've been back. We're not very good now, but I mean still good to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely a dream for me when I was a kid. Like I just love wearing the shirt when I was little, and it's just proud because obviously you know everyone in your family supports Newcastle as well, so it's a nice feeling to be able to do that. And it seems like it would be all positive and everything was great, but it really wasn't. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be at all.
But at that age, at that level, playing for the junior academy.
Well, it started out all right when I was like. 9 or 10, I was doing really well. Academy,
you liked me. For the most part, for to begin with, like from what I remember, because I used to, because I was like what you were. I think you were 7 when you initially went, so I wasn't old enough to just be left in the house. So I would go to the training sessions all the time, and you were like 100% the standout player of that like group, like the kid with the fastest feet, like picked up on skills quickest and stuff like that. And I remember you being taken to like Paris and shit. With Newcastle, and at that point you're like this is great, like you're getting given like Newcastle kits and football boots and
things for free, and you're like it's great, and everyone from the outside looking in would think so lucky, you know, it's a great opportunity. And like I did enjoy it at the start, but then I started to like think there's something's wrong. Like I just started to fall out with love of football when I was maybe 12, 13. That age.
Really early.
I was overtrained. I was almost turned into a robot. Like,
well,
I couldn't think for myself. Like, I wasn't playing the way I knew to play when
like,
I was a kid.
What you got taken to the academy for was you like quick feet, you like flair of skill, and that's just like you get there and they're like, all right, none of that.
Oh, really?
Cut that out. Mm. Like, basically, pass to this person when I tell you to. And it's like they're building a team, which is effectively pointless because that team. Is there for the sake of being there. It's not, unless you have one person that has a standout quality, that one person will never make it. So you're just building robots of average players.
I've got you, yeah. Well, it's from their point of view, the lowest risk but lowest reward kind of strategy, isn't it? You just build
it's easy. It's easier to manage a team of like people that tell you that do exactly what you want them to do, as opposed to like trying to manage kids that are like one person's got really a lot of flair, one person's, I don't know, particularly strong or whatever.
A group of individuals.
Yeah, that's way harder to manage. So I guess that's one of the reasons to get around it. But
yeah,
but so they obviously get, sorry about him, but you get you ended up going from like, so you got picked up at like, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, whatever it was, whereby you are going to school, playing for the school team, and then like going from school to Newcastle training to bed, and then again.
How many days
so
a
like,
week?
That's I imagine that's played a part in why you've. Like you say, fell out of it to a degree.
Yeah, it was just sad because, like, I can remember being at a point when I was around 13, 14, and I was just like, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to stop going because I didn't want to let my dad down. I didn't want to let people that knew I was at Newcastle Academy down. I didn't want to, like, be that person, you know what I mean, that kind of gave up on it. So I would keep going and keep going, and I don't know, kind of just slowly fell out all over the game.
So was your dad a big driving influence?
Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah.
Was he football mad as well?
Yeah. My dad is absolutely football mad. And like, I have to thank him for like just pushing me through it when I was a kid, when I like didn't really want to train, and he would make sure that I was doing the right things.
Mm-hmm. At the time
it was difficult, and I thought, why can't I just play with my friends, or why can't I just be a normal kid? But obviously he saw something in me that I was talented, and he pushed me in the right direction. And he was probably, me and Jack spoke about it, and we can speak to my dad about it now, probably a little bit too tough on us.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about it now is he understands that, and he's accepted that.
I bet you it must have been quite difficult from his point of view as well, because he probably sees that you want to go out and have fun, and he probably wants you to go out and have fun with your mates, but at the same time doesn't want you to look back and go, well, what if I trained harder and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
So balancing out from his angle as well,
because he's in a position where he knows I'm talented and he's trying to push me, but he doesn't want to overdo it. It was a very difficult thing for him. I didn't realize that at the time, but now looking back, like, if I had a kid and he had the same talent, it's a difficult situation to put in.
Do you
pull him away from it because, oh, it's his dream club, it's Newcastle United, or do you just let him keep going and just let him, you know, kind of fall off that conveyor belt that was inevitable, that was going to happen? And it did happen at 14. I got released, and I was devastated, but at the same time it was like a relief. It was a weird feeling.
I can imagine. And
it was weird.
So 14 years old, you're kind of falling out of love with it.
Mm-hmm.
The Newcastle release you from your contract, and you, what then is your next plan? What did you immediately think? Did you think you're done with football, you're not going to do it anymore, or do you want to sign another contract with another club, or do you want a fresh change?
So my thought process after being released at like 14, I was like, let's just get back to basics. Let's just like kind of figure out why I love playing football and why I started, pretty much. So I ended up just going to a boys club, kind of starting from scratch. I went to the Wolves End boys club.
Shearer's old club. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was there for almost 2 years, and we were really good. We were a good team at the time, and because we were a good team at that level, we were playing academy teams. So we would like go on the road and play different academies, and we so happened to play Sheffield Wednesday, and we went down there and I had a good game. And this is when I was like 15, and they were like, we want to see you back, so would you come back for a trial in a couple of weeks time? So I did. I went down and I impressed, and then the rest is kind of history. I ended up signing for Sheffield and then starting my scholarship at 16, which is a 2-year contract at the club. It's not like great money, but it's just an opportunity to
at a big club, at a former Premier League club, yeah, a recognised label. What do you think was it that allowed you to enjoy football again? Was it just a lot less pressure? Were you playing less actual volume of football, or was it that you were at a level where you could exceed with a lot less expectation on you, kind of thing?
Probably the less pressure, I think it is. It's not so much the volume, I think it was the amount of pressure I had on me, and like I was expected to perform, and it was just like, it was all too much. I was a young kid, and you should just be going out and enjoying life, really, not just football, just whatever you're doing, being able to go out and play different sports if you want to play different sports, and just kind of doing it naturally. Whereas I felt like where I was at Newcastle, it was like all like artificial. It was just all
it's weird. It's just like, from having, I've like weirdly now got like this massive insight into academies, having never played in one because I've been following him around. So I'm sure you'll get to it, but you've been to other academies, and they're all just common coverage of each other. They're all exactly the same. It's really, really strange. They're a very odd place. And then having obviously been to America, I see what he's doing there. It just makes, I don't know how we ever get to that, but that's effectively what we need to try and replicate in some description. Because it just doesn't work. Like,
it's hard.
Like, how many Newcastle players have you seen come through the academy in recent years? Andy Carroll, a few others you can name over the past 30 years. Like, it clearly doesn't work. So,
Who are the best academies in the UK and England then?
Well, I mean, it's been like Southampton. They've been the one that's kind of set the precedent for everyone to then.
But that said, like, they're a good academy. That being said, once they get good players and they get to the first team, they then sell them. So it's kind of a,
like, it's difficult because we can look at it and we can criticize it and say, you know, it's, they're not doing it right. It's clearly not working. But I couldn't say I've got the magic wand to be like, I know how to do it.
Yeah,
yeah. It's very difficult to do. For sure, it is difficult. But the way they're doing it now is definitely not working.
I'm just thinking out loud, but obviously you had education. Use education with air quotes, because that was what you did at Sheffield was education, but it wasn't enforced really. It was because they had to kind of whatever. But if they had a genuine emphasis on doing that and then not football constantly, I'd maybe get less worn out. I don't know, like, because obviously essentially that's what you've done now to a degree.
Yeah,
and I would say now, like, I wouldn't even say at Sheffield you enjoyed football again. Really, like, it was more enjoyable because it was a second chance, but. Mm-hmm. Oh, until like recent years, that's when I remember you saying to me fairly recently you felt like you were like 8-9 years old again, where you've properly got a grip on it again and wake up and want to play football as opposed to just like turning up to the ground.
I'm jumping ahead a bit here, but like the fact that I was at Sheffield and I was a professional footballer and I was probably the saddest I've been for a long time when I was there, I just, people would be like, what? Like, you're living the dream, you're doing this and this.
You went from being really happy playing for Wolves End to signing for Sheffield Wednesday. And then being really sad again with you. How long were you there for? 3 years?
I was there for 3 years, yeah.
Okay, and then back down to a really sad position again.
Yeah.
And what do you put that down to?
I think...
The expectation again.
So obviously, I mentioned before, I signed a 2-year scholarship at first. And that was okay. I wasn't unhappy with that. I was quite enjoying it, you know, I was just playing football and I was progressing, but I don't know, it was okay. It wasn't too bad. I was quite happy. Then I got offered to sign a professional contract, which I did. And then it was just like things changed. It was like everything's expected of you. Like you're obviously a professional now and pressure is a lot higher. You're expected to perform. And I found that really difficult, only being like 18, 19 at the time. And I was just not the same player. And I felt like I wasn't kind of like helped as a person. I was only just looked at as a footballer. You know, you're not like developed as a person. And I just felt I couldn't really think for myself and I didn't have a personality. It was weird. I'd like go in every day and do the same thing every single day. Eat, sleep, train, repeat. And it was just like where I just felt stuck. It was a weird feeling. So obviously you ended up getting let go by Sheffield and then went over to America and just kind of found out who I was really, you know, like I just kind of figured out what I was all about as a person and like I matured obviously over time and started to figure out again why I wanted to play football and then now I absolutely love it.
Great.
Yeah.
You want to take a short break and we'll come back in 5 minutes? Cool. So I just wanted to touch on what it must have been like growing up in the UK, where football is culturally just a massive, massive thing. It's what everyone, it makes up a large part of everyone's life. And you are growing up talented at this thing and you're going to be a professional at this thing. What was that like socially? Were you like a rock star amongst most of your friends or did they end up playing football with you? Because that's where you're spending all your time.
So when I grew up, like everyone was playing football. Mm-hmm. Like all my friends were into football. It was just kind of how it was. And I think once I started to realize that I could, you know, be pretty good at this and potentially make professional, it was kind of a big deal, but I wouldn't say like a rock star kind of thing. But like some of my friends were, I don't know, they like, just respected it, you know, like because I was putting in a lot of work to, I was always like training and doing my own thing and I ended up doing pretty well and becoming like a professional. I mean, I wasn't at the time in England an actual fully fledged professional playing in the first team, but I ended up professional contract, so I kind of got my reward for it. So yeah, people respected it, I think. And coming from, I wouldn't say we're from a bad area, but like, you know, a lot of people just settle with being okay doing, you know, they like just going out and which isn't bad at all, like, you know, they do their own thing, they like to just work on whatever job, a trade or whatever they want to get into and live their life like that. But
it's most because it's unusual, so like it, like you say, they're doing whatever they want to do, which is fine, but like to hear your story is alien to a lot of people because even moving to like Sheffield at 16 by yourself is something that most people wouldn't do, and then let alone move to America and do what you've done.
Did you live by yourself?
Well, not by myself.
Did you live in like a house with loads of other guys who were signed at the academy?
So when I first went over, when I was 16, I lived with a host family. Mm-hmm. And it was me and a teammate. And then we ended up like being at like three different host families because some of them were a little crazy. Like some of them just like were not supposed to be doing that. I don't know how they ended up becoming a host family, but like they would just feed us like terrible food and like it was just not a good environment to be in. So we ended up getting like shifted around quite a bit.
Yeah, so they basically get quite a lot, these host families or people that put you up get a lot of money per kid, per academy player.
Right, okay.
And then so some people see it as a way of, oh, I'm getting like, it's significant amount of money. And they'll just buy shit food and like
try milk it.
To the extent where, yeah, so they just get profiting massively. So to the extent where one of the ladies that Johnny lived with like limited how many baths I could have because that was like using too much water.
We'd be in the shower and she'd be like, right, that's been 5 minutes, get out. And I'd be like, what? It's crazy. Or like a day before a game, we'd have like pie and peas or like Sainsbury's. Like, it's just, I'm like, come on, like...
Yeah, I suppose if you're going to bring kids into your house that aren't yours, you've got to have a love for it. You've got to like want to give them the best stuff, surely. Yeah. If you're doing it for profit, then, I mean, there's other things you could be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I started out doing that for 2 years when I was on scholarship. And then I signed my first year professional. And then I got an apartment with a teammate that was just outside of the training ground. Which was nice to have that little bit of independence. I had a car at that time as well, so it was pretty cool to have.
Was it never like part of you that was like, this is the first time I'm been let free, I could just go off the rails, not off the rails, but like, you know, push things a little bit and have like, I could go out a little bit more than you should have or anything like that? Because I mean, most people do. I mean, when you go to university, it's the first time most people have been away from their parents, and the first month of university is carnage because most people just have never had that freedom before.
Yeah.
And you've obviously come from an even more structured and disciplined background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, I know a lot of people do kind of look at that when they get a bit of freedom. They go a little bit crazy and go drinking and kind of do things like that. But with me, I was just always like so focused on what I wanted to become. So I'd end up like just going to training and then like doing nothing much but trying to better myself as a player. But I think we mentioned before, it gets to a point sometimes if you're too focused on just football, it can kind of be a little bit toxic because you end up just getting in your own head and you don't really think about anything else but football. And I think it's vital that you need an escape. You need something to take your mind off it. So taking up, I don't know, maybe cooking, or if it's getting into a different sport, or if it's reading or whatever it may be, something to take your mind off it. It's just a healthy thing to do. And I think I never had that at the time, and I think I was almost too professional, whereas some people would go the other way and kind of live this football lifestyle of going out and, you know, getting girls and going to the clubs and whatnot. I was never really about that, and I never have been really about that lifestyle. So
you say you've never been about that lifestyle. Is there part of it, if you weren't a professional footballer, do you think you wouldn't be the type of guy to go out and drink every weekend? Or is it just because you're so dedicated that you don't find that appealing?
Good question. I mean, if I wasn't a footballer and I never really took that path, I wouldn't say I'd be going out all of the time and, you know, party all of the time. But I think I would have been definitely more relaxed about it and just socially went out and drinking, and I would have definitely had a completely different lifestyle. But since a young age, being disciplined and on a different path to other people, it's kind of just all I've ever known. What I do.
So what were the things that you used to kind of distract yourself and take yourself away from the game, you said?
I think just being a little bit more social. So when I was at university in America, I just let go a little bit. You know, I could have a drink now and again, and I wasn't always just thinking about football because I had schoolwork to do as well, and I'd never really had school to do alongside football.
So what degree did you study over there?
Sport management.
Okay, great.
Really enjoyed it. It was testing, but like, I enjoyed that test, and it was something completely different and I'd never really thought I would do. I left like high school at like 15, 16, and I was like, yeah, I already had a contract in Sheffield at the time, and I was like, I don't really care about these final exams. I'm just going to be a footballer.
Yeah.
So if you told me at that time I would be going to university, I would be like, no chance. But here I am. I obviously went to university and I loved it, and I'm really glad I did do it.
You enjoy getting back into like the academic world again. Because I did that. I studied engineering. I dropped out just because I didn't like engineering, and then I took a couple of years off playing poker, and then came back into studying again. And I really didn't enjoy studying that much the first time around, but the second time around I came into it, I was like a little bit older, kind of didn't think I'd be doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
And really, really, and I was doing something I'd kind of enjoyed more, and all of a sudden just loved it. Mm-hmm. which had never happened before. Did you find that happened to you?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said before, when I was at school, like high school, didn't take it seriously at all. Like, didn't care about it, like had that attitude of, you know, typical football. It's like, it's just most like, people would, you know, I'm you're sure, a nerd yeah. if you're in a school. Yeah. Like, it's, so that was kind of my way of looking at it. And then when I went to America, I thought, you know, I'm going to get a free education. So like, let's take it seriously. Like, absolutely. Don't waste this opportunity. I've never been like really smart at school, but I thought I'm going to test myself here and see what I can do. And I was quite pleasantly surprised that I like learned about things that I obviously would never really look at myself. Just like having that like holistic kind of education where I'd never had it before, and it was just something that I needed, I think, like I say, to take my mind off just football. And I was learning different things and kind of just getting experience. I don't know, you know what I'm saying? I was just like experience these different things that I would never really have done before.
So socially, when you moved out to the States, the American universities are renowned for their social life and fraternities and big parties and that sort of thing. So that must have been quite an experience. That must have been quite fun. Did you join a fraternity? Or I don't actually know how a fraternity works. I just know those things that are on American Pie.
American Pie, right? Like, that's what you think. And I was thinking the same when I first went over. I was like, oh, is it going to be like American Pie? Then I got there and I was like, kind of is. Like, it is a little bit like American Pie.
That sounds awesome.
But my school was like a smaller school. It was a private school. So it was about like 5,000 students that went there. So it wasn't a huge party school, but we did still have fraternities, and we had fraternity parties and house parties with our soccer team, and we had like a big house. Yeah, like beer pong, the whole thing. Yeah. So it was a little bit like that, and I enjoyed it. Like my freshman year when I was there, you know, it was a great time. You know, getting together with like the guys and just having a good time and experiencing these frat parties and how life is like over there for students. It was just completely different to what it is back in the UK. So
are you coming into that environment into their first team football?
Yeah, I mean that's how it would. Oh, it'd be cool, I guess, like first team football in university, like it's the NCAA.
But their number one team. You weren't in like their junior, so you
no,
went straight
no,
to the number one
team. Yeah.
So and that's their second biggest sport, and it's quite a sporting university. So you must have had some kind of like prestigious social status that you could kind of walk into a house party, people would know who you were, that sort of thing. That must have been awesome.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. It was a little strange at first. You know, kind of. Being at a university and being an athlete there, I didn't really know how it was. Like, am I just like recognized as a normal student, or do people know that I'm an athlete? And then I don't know, still to this day I don't really know if people would like recognize us. If I was to walk into a house party, they'll be like, oh, that's the guy that's on the soccer team.
Yeah,
but like amongst athletes we all knew who each other were, but I don't really know about if anyone would have recognized us for being an athlete outside of that, you know. I don't know.
And did you, what's spring break like over there? Because that's also something that's...
You enjoyed that, didn't you?
you went over there for spring break.
It's exactly
how
you thought it was.
There's a documentary on Netflix about spring breaks in America, and it just looks mental.
Everything about it. So we drove like an SUV, like this big white SUV thing down. And it took us like, was it like 15 hours something?
Roughly, yeah, around
ish.
That.
Mm-hmm. You went down. So you did.
We drove
north of Florida. You got Florida.
Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like that sounds like, so 15 hours driving in England would be an absolute nightmare. But like when you've got like everyone loaded up and like there's like six of us in it or something, seven of us, like all this packed in, we've got like creative Bud Lights. It's like it was sound like it was just obviously it took ages, but it was just like a laugh all the way there.
You did it one day.
You
just did it in one day, 15 hours.
Yeah, we drove
just
down
solid
down
drive,
day,
just
yeah.
switched drivers and just kept going.
Got up early and just went for it. And just
but then, like, all of a sudden, you just like hit the beach, like drive along, hit the beach, and then it's just like can't get moved on the beach, just literally shoulder to shoulder. Then, like every now and again, there'll be like a frat flag, like in the middle of the at the beach with like coolers of beers everywhere. It's exactly how you would imagine it would be. Like, it's just nuts. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was saying. Like, everyone thinks like, oh, is it really like American Pie in that kind of environment? And it is really like pretty yeah. spot on.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, like the spring break environment, like it's something that you would enjoy my first year, my second year, but yeah. then gets a little bit older.
I felt old.
Well, how old were you when you
I was 20. I just turned 26.
And most people there, 20, 21, 22.
Yeah, well, no, not even that. Like, you go, what's college age? In, is it 18 you go to college?
Yeah. So like 18 to 20,
22 max, probably.
Yeah.
You don't have a problem getting alcohol? Because it's 21's legal age there, right?
Yeah, but it's people like, just, it's yeah. pretty laid back. A lot of people have got fake IDs.
Okay.
And people just end up like buying a load of drink and then just bringing on the beach and coolers and then...
Yeah, you're not really... For the most part, going into bars until late on.
Okay.
So
more house parties and that sort of thing.
We just had like this worst. One of Johnny's friends, named Hunter Allen.
Hunter Allen.
Yeah.
Yeah. His nickname is Big Sexy. Just that kind of tells everything about
his first name Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Second name.
Back the front, isn't it? Back the front. Yeah.
He is a unique guy, but he'd said like first off. We were using his car to get there. Well, not his parents. We went for like a meal after one of Johnny's games the day before. And his parents came and like sat with us. And then he hadn't asked if he could use the car yet. And it will go the next morning at like 4 a.m.
What?
He's like, all right, I've taken your car. And they're like, well, kind of. And they're like, figure it out. And he, for some reason, was left in responsibility to book the accommodation. So we were like an hour away from Florida, legit like an hour away, knackered, wanting to get there. And he like pulls his laptop out and he's on his emails and we're like, he was like, oh, I'm like, what? He's like, oh, they've been trying to get in touch with us. Like the booking didn't go through. So we're like, I was 100% thought he was joking. Like that couldn't have happened.
Well, maybe like an hour away.
Yeah, an hour at most.
You must have been raging.
So we like last minute got this like shit motel thing. It was like what you would see. It was like you know them one story motels. It was like that, but it was two.
Right.
Like
on those murder mystery things.
Yeah. Yeah. we had them, and we just kind of like, I think it was about the same price. So it didn't really cost any more money. But we were meant to be staying in this like a cool house with like big pool of our own and like. Anyway, if I ended up staying in this like motel, but we just ended up buying cans and just getting drunk in the, because like, there was all of us in like separate rooms, so everyone just kind of was walking around and bouncing from room, like doors open all the time and just kind of going but everywhere.
You don't really spend that much time in the hotel.
No,
it's like the majority of time is on the beach.
Yeah,
just like the whole day is on the beach, and then at the night time you'd go to the bars.
How many people are like on the beach and like at once?
Thousands.
There's a lot of people.
It's cool until some frat dickhead puts a flag next to you or near you, nearby, because then people just swarm to that and you're like, oh.
But I can imagine you getting annoyed at that.
But then that's also an absolute red flag for the police to be like, because they come over on horseback around, because you're not meant to have open liquor in America in general, let alone on the beach and in a rage. So it's a really weird like unspoken rule. Like if you're kind of behaving yourself and you have it in like a cup if it's covered or in some description, they don't really bother you.
Right.
If you openly drink in a bottle or a can of beer, they'll like, or a vodka or something, they'll just take it off you and pour it out.
I got you.
Someone sticks a flag in the ground, it's like you've got to be like, oh shit, and like try to hide everything and like.
It's been quite an experience for a 26-year-old to see all these 20-year-olds acting crazy.
Remember when you first ever started a drink and then people would like fall over? Like,
yeah.
There was like some of the people with, there was a girl that was on the women's soccer team, I think.
No.
No?
No. I don't know who you're talking about, so.
Then what about, she ended up face down in the sand, like, she had like dark hair, I don't know her name.
I don't think she was.
I had a similar experience, but when I went back to uni,
she was some sort of sports person of some description. I don't know what.
But back to uni at 21, and there were loads of 18-year-olds that had just been let loose for the first time. And it's just like in the first week, there's so many people that are just sick everywhere, all over your flat and all over. You just see so many girls like hugging a toilet bowl with like their hair covered in vomit. And
That was exactly what she was doing. Like, but she was like face down in the sand, like motionless. And I was like, is she all right? I was the only person that was like, I was like, yeah, she'll be fine. Like all our friends are like kicking under the ass, she'll be sound.
So have you always played centre back then?
No, I started off as a left winger.
Okay.
When I was really young, right. Like when I was first in the Newcastle system, I was a left winger. Like
I think
Jack was saying earlier, like I was kind of like tricky, yeah. Like skillful kind of player, kind of just like off the cuff, you know, just whatever, just played and just kind of enjoyed it. And then I slowly become slower and also like and also grew a bit. So they were like, yeah, you may be suited a little bit further back.
I think now would be a good time to go on your Instagram, because I think I'm not 100% sure you have a picture of yourself when you were a tricky little winger.
When I was, yeah, I was. It's a weird one.
So this
yeah.
is this is High Point University's colours there.
Yeah, purple.
This is the highlight out in America.
Yeah.
Let me go back and try and find this picture.
Yeah, it looks legit like a pretty big stage, isn't it? I've seen some videos on Twitter that Jack showed me before. And there's quite big crowds at the matches, and
yeah, we get pretty good crowds. Like the first game of the season. What they'll have is like a family night or like an open weekend, and all the families come in and you get like maybe like 5,000 at the game, so that's pretty cool.
Look at you there.
Yeah, that's back tricky in the day winger, when I first hashtag. Started. Yeah. Yeah, that was when I first started. And then
how old are you there?
Oh, must be maybe 9, they're probably 10, I think 10 or 11.
I don't know, 9, 10.
I'd say 10. Yeah. But yeah, then I just kind of moved into left back and then grew again. They were like, all right, maybe try your centre back, and then I was good, and they were like, yeah.
Were you left footed?
Yeah, left footed, yeah.
So you're on the left hand side of the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So scroll down a little bit, Jack, because I was going through this early on today and I saw a video of you.
Oh, that was up, that's up, I've just passed
it. Up, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
A video of you doing some crazy things with the football that I've never seen a football centre back do.
Yeah.
This is unusual for someone of your height to do.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive skills. Can you still do all that stuff?
Yeah, I can still do it, yeah. It's just something I learned when I was young.
Yeah.
I just messed around with the ball.
But that's not something centre-backs...
Not normally. Normally, centre-backs are just like the big kid when they're young. And they're just like, that's the position that they are. Like, very few, like a left-winger kind of gets converted to a left-back, and then centre-half is pretty rare.
Yeah, yeah.
But just because I grew so quickly when I was around like 15, 16, I just shot up. And they were like, oh, well, maybe let's see what he can do.
That's centre-back. Do you ever pull those skills out mid-game?
No chance. No way.
I think everyone would just be amazed.
No, I don't think my manager would be too happy if I started juggling the ball in the game.
It's like a goalkeeper being able to do stuff like that. Well, you're seeing that now with some of the City and Liverpool goalkeepers.
They are good with the feet. Yeah.
Footwork's incredible. You compare to that goalkeepers 10 years ago, probably centre-backs are going to be required to do stuff like that in 10 years from now.
Yeah, the game's definitely changing. Like, centre-backs are now required to be like to come up with the ball and find passes.
Long-range
like the modern
passes.
Day. Not so much long-range passes, but also like just breaking the lines with passes and like being confident coming out with the ball. Whereas years ago, it was like, right, defend, do your job, head, clear, tackle. That was about it. So,
have you ever had any major injuries, any major setbacks you've ever recovered from?
Not really, no. When I was young, I was like always getting injured, like broke my arm. And
you had a broken arm there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you played for like a full season with that. Like big.
Arta, you didn't,
I was actually, I broke my hand there, but I decided to put it all into my elbow.
That is a big cast for a hand. So you didn't have to spend loads of time in rehab and what have you. I imagine that's a really frustrating thing for a sportsman when you're spending months out watching everyone else play and you can't.
Yeah.
Kind of
I've been pretty lucky. I have been pretty lucky with injuries. I haven't had many.
Still,
I had a slight tear in my LCL in my left knee.
Yeah.
Which put me out for most of the summer. Maybe it was like 2 months out or something.
Yeah.
Which was pretty tough at the time, just like sitting out watching everyone else play and you just feel like you're not getting any better. And
I bet, yeah. So this is your girlfriend here on the right-hand side.
Who has made a snide comment on the way over here about not being good enough to be on. And I was like, no, that's not the case.
Just
another time.
We
wanted her to be on, just another time. So whenever we next...
I thought I didn't have time.
Did she say she wasn't good enough to come on?
She said that.
She was, saying,
she was just joking. Just yeah.
No, well, next time she comes over, we have to have her on then.
Well, yeah. He has your shout out anyway, Chrissy.
Yeah.
So how did you
that's
guys
all
meet?
Again. Next.
This was this one at one of the American Pie style house parties that you bumped into?
Kind of. We just knew each other through sport. She was a javelin thrower at the school.
Oh, cool, nice.
At the time, and then we just kind of met that way. You know, I was a freshman at the time when she was a senior. Mm-hmm. So she looked at me as like a little child at first because she thought I was 18, but I was actually 20 at the time. So she'd like run up to me and like say my name in like a horrendous British accent and then run away, and I'll be like, excellent. What is with this girl? But then turned out, you know, we just kind of clicked, and I was 20, so she was like, oh, so you're not a little baby, and then just went from there really quick.
That's an American style of flirting. Do they all understand your accent there? That's fine.
Nope. Nope. It's so hard.
I've got a mate that I go down to London with work, for sure, Geordies, and my favourite thing is having to translate from English into English.
Yeah, it's difficult.
That happened to me when we went to Florida. Like, that was the most...
No one understood you.
Well, I thought they did, but... So... just about the time we checked it in this motel, everyone was kind of just mingling around. I mean, I was still having a conversation with a group of people, and finished the conversation. I was like, oh, everyone can understand me, it's fine. I don't know what I was worried about. And I came over to speak to someone else, and Johnny was on the balcony, like talking to the people that I'd just been talking to. And I heard him like laughing his head off, and I was like, what? Like, what are you talking about? What are you laughing at? And he was like, oh, tell him what you just said, tell him what you just said. And this girl's like, no. And then he was like, oh, she just asked if you can speak English.
I had a full-on conversation. And
she just nodded along. It felt rude to interrupt me, but then...
Mm. Yeah, it's pretty difficult. Like, a lot of people don't understand what I'm saying when I'm over there. It's so easy to tell, though. Like, it's so easy to tell because you'll ask a question that responds... it requires, like, an actual response, and there's, like... Yeah. You know, I'll be like, oh, you know, have you got the time? And it's like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you don't understand that at all.
In your defense, Americans, they love to like overpronounce words. They love to enunciate.
Yeah. But some Americans are really tough to understand. Like, really? A southern accent, like a strong southern accent.
Long draw.
They mumble like crazy. Like, actually, Hunter, who Jack mentioned before, his dad is impossible to understand. He's just like, it sounds ridiculous. I don't even want to attempt the accent, but it's hard. I don't understand.
Outside of actually playing football, like the matches, what kind of training do you put in? How often are you training? You train on a daily basis?
When I'm in season and we're training all the time, a lot of the training isn't too intense because we've got games. Mm-hmm. So we have games on the weekend, sometimes two games a week. So it's more just like injury prevention kind of things. We'll do like a short, sharp session to keep us sharp, like technically, but it's not too exhausting, so we're fresh for the game. Outside of the season, we do, I'm just speaking from when I was at university, we do like a spring season and a fall season. The fall would be like in season when we had games, and the spring would be not, like, it wasn't a competitive football. So we would do a lot of running, and it was hard. It was really tough. I'm not the fittest, like naturally fittest players, so it was really tough for me. But we would do maybe like two or three gym sessions a week, and then we would do a lot of running. But it's really interesting because, like, in the spring season, the NCAA, which is the like governing body of the whole of college soccer, they don't allow you to actually play soccer in the spring. Like, they allow, like, I think it's like 8 hours a week of actual, like, soccer practice, so you've got to like fit the other the hours in with just like running or conditioning, with whatever it is. Like,
why do they limit your footballing time?
Apparently it's to stop fatigue, like to stop burnout, but like you are training like crazy hard without the ball, so it doesn't make any sense to me.
And it's strange to have such a blanket rule across a whole population of people where everyone's different in terms of their physical and fitness abilities. And
it also makes no sense at all because you'd like work so hard in the spring, get super fit, and then you would go into the summer and be like, done.
That's
like
amazing.
Some people would play over the summer, like just like a summer league, it's called a PDL. You just basically keep sharp, and then when the PDL season finishes, that's when your fall season starts. So it's just kind of keeping sharp, match fit, so when the season starts, you're ready to go. But some people quite a lot of people just, you know, go home for the summer and just relax and drink and have fun. So, like, you work crazy hard in the spring for no reason at all.
That's what I was going to ask. Is there any point in the annual calendar is any time we have a complete off season or you're not training. Like, you've been home for now, for, well, back in the UK for 2 weeks or so. Mm-hmm. Have you done any exercise then, or has it just been kind of chilling out? And
yeah, so I had the first like week off where I just completely let my body relax, you know, just like any little niggles that I had just to settle. But just like recently, maybe like last week or so, I started like steadily progressing and getting more and more runs in and doing more and more just like body weight circuits and stuff.
One last segment here. I just thought we'd touch on your training, just outside of the actual playing of football, and how often mm-hmm. you're training and what that looks like.
Yeah, so my training outside of football, it's pretty tough because you're training by yourself. So when you're getting ready for the season to start, you kind of have like a pre-season. Mm-hmm. And when you have that, it is difficult at times to almost find the motivation to get yourself ready. But like at the moment, I'm like very motivated because I have, you know, so like something to look at. I've got a contract at a team and I'm really excited to get going. So like it's pretty easy for me to do the work I'm doing at the moment. So I'm working pretty hard at the moment.
So when does the season start with your new club?
The season starts sort of like the preseason, a few preseason games. We were on like February, and then March. I think it's March 9th is the first game.
Okay, so soon, yeah. So you're ready to go within a few weeks, I suppose.
Yep. So I've got to get myself in like good enough condition so when I go into preseason, I'm like really halfway there. You know. Yeah.
And you've obviously been to San Antonio. You've mm-hmm. seen the stadium, seen the facilities, met with the managers. What was the thing that made you want to go there? What was the thing that grasped?
I would say, so the reason why I wanted to go to San Antonio, I went to a few different places. I went to Albuquerque in New Mexico. I liked it there. I thought it was a really good setup, and the city was really cool. I enjoyed it there. They invited me back for preseason, but I went to New Mexico after. Sorry, I went to San Antonio after that. And was like blown away by the facilities they had for a USL team. The coach is English over there, and I kind of like connected pretty well with him. And the stadium is incredible for USL level. It holds like 9,000 people, and it's pretty full most of the time. And I don't know, just like everything about the place itself. San Antonio is a really cool place, and it just felt right for me. And they made it clear on like the last day of my trial that they wanted to offer me a contract. So I took it, and I knew that I was going to have a contract there, whereas in New Mexico and other places that I'd been, they were like, well, Fabio back for pre-season, but there was no like, you know, like fixed contract.
I got you. Okay. And that, it's one level below the MLS, isn't it? So and you we were chatting earlier on before we started, saying that it could be promoted back into the MLS within the next few years.
Yeah, so it's not a promotion and relegation system in the US.
Yeah.
It's expansion, so they have like expansion teams to the MLS. So if you're in the USL and you're doing pretty well and you kind of meet all the criteria, like if you have the right financing, if you have stadium plans, if you have a good fan base, if you're a successful team, you've got to kind of tick all the boxes. And if you do that, you can kind of make a bid to the MLS, and the MLS kind of look at that and figure out whether or not you fit their criteria, I guess.
And then, so how long is your contract for, if you don't mind me asking?
So the contract that I signed was a year contract, and there's another option, but it's a club's option for an extension contract.
Okay, so it's technically, if you were to carry on there for a little while, you could be playing up against Steven Gerrard and what have you in a few years' time if it gets taken into the MLS.
Well, he is no longer there, but I could. Now he's finished. Sure. He did play in the MLS also.
But Beckham's retired, I know that.
Yeah. So yeah, it could be, because San Antonio have had plans to go to the MLS.
Yeah.
For a while, and they're definitely a club that's going in the right direction. And I feel like they could go to the MLS anytime soon. So yeah, I mean, I want to play at the highest level. I want to try and play at the MLS or some of the top leagues in Europe, and I feel like I'm good enough to do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm at a stage in my career, obviously I'm 24 now, and I want to push on, and I feel like I'm almost at the best years that I've got. So if that's with San Antonio, that would be great. Like, I would love that. But if there's another, if while I'm at San Antonio and I impress and I move on, I'd, I want to just play at the highest level possible.
Yeah.
But
challenge yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And San Antonio, like, very thankful for them to give me this opportunity to like have another shot at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like now I'm, like I say, 24, and I'm very ready for what's to come.
Well, what do you see yourself doing after football? You say you study sports management at university. What once your playing days are over, where do you see yourself going?
I want to stay in football, for sure. Like, I want to hopefully go into coaching. Like, I just love football now, and although we spoke about earlier, I like fell in and out of love with football, but at the moment, I just love everything about football, and I want to coach. I've been coaching just some of the younger players when I was at university, just like helping out here and there, and I just really enjoy.
Must be really fulfilling.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. If you can see development in a player and you feel like you've made, you've played a part in that, it's a good feeling. So I definitely want to go into coaching after I have, hopefully, fingers crossed, a long career in playing.
Yeah.
Do
you think you'd be able to manage players differently, especially young players, having gone through the academy system and understand the kind of structured system that they're in, better than someone else may have who've not gone through that system?
I think so. I mean, the US system is definitely different to the English system and what I went through, but I think going through, you know, hard times and going through rejection and people telling you that, you know, you're not quite good enough and things like that, and understanding football, how it is at the academy system, and seeing how ruthless and kind of like dog-eat-dog it is at the professional environment. I've experienced all of that at a pretty young age, so I feel like that's definitely helped me. So when I get to that point, when I'm older and I'm maybe in my 30s and I'm finished playing, I feel like I can like apply that knowledge into coaching and do pretty well.
Something I've always wondered about with professional football, it's a little bit of a tangent here. When you're on the pitch and you're a centre-back and you've got a striker that's right there up against you, you guys are like jostling a lot of the time. Maybe you could give the slight elbow. Mm-hmm. And it's 90 minutes 90 minutes of battling, really.
Yeah.
And it's quite gritty. What have you. Mm-hmm. After the game, are you mates with the striker? Does it calm down, or is there still a little bit of a grit saving for the away game or something like that?
I wouldn't say mates. Yeah. You show sportsmanship, you know. After the game, if you have had a tussle with someone in the game, and it's more of a respect because he's given you a good game, and you've let him know that he's in a game. So it's that mutual respect between the both of you, is that, you know, shake hands at the end, good game, and that's all it is, really. Unless obviously you know the player previously before you played and you are friends, but it's never really, you know, too friendly. Like, you know, at times it can get a bit chippy, and it's competitive, you know. You want to win, and if you've got to do what you've got to do to win, it's the way it works.
Yeah. Who's the highest profile player you've ever played against in that position where you've been like jostling against them, that you've had like a gritty game against?
I've had some games where I've played against high profile players that have been like way better than me.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Like, so when I was at Sheffield, I was playing like in the reserves, and we were away at Everton, and they brought on some of the senior players, and at the time it was Leon Osmond and someone else, I think, but Lukaku came on for like 10 minutes and I was on the pitch at the time, and I was like, get me off, like, he is throwing me around like I've never,
just so physical.
Oh yeah. And I mean, other players that have played at a high level, like when I was at Sheffield, there was people at the time who were there on loan, like Ross Barkley and other very, very good players. And they just are just a class above. Like, they're just very, very good players. And you know you're in a game when you're playing against someone like that.
Yeah.
Because
when you watch it on TV, you're seeing very good players, Premier League players against Premier League players. So the difference isn't, it's not like obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're used to playing at a certain level and someone comes in that's just like two grades above, it'll just like stand out like night and day, I bet.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the difference between a top level player and obviously the League One, League Two, even Championship, is they have that little bit of quality. They take all the boxes that they have technical ability, they're athletic, they're smart, like tactically smart, they know where to be, they very rarely let themselves get exposed in out of position, or they're very smart players.
Mm-hmm.
So they have all of these assets, whereas you feel like you go down, maybe in the Championship they don't quite have the technical ability, but they're super fit.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's always something missing.
Mm.
But that's why they're at the top. That's why they're the best in the world. Or yeah. that's why they're playing in the best league in the world. They have everything that it takes.
So did you let Lukaku score? Did he get managed to get one past you?
I got took off in that game. I got sort of like straight away in that game. I think he did like score like two or three passes. We got battered that game. But yeah, I got took off pretty much straight away.
You say you want to stick with football after you finish playing after a long career. What is it that draws you to? What does it motivate you to kind of stick with the sport or rather than trying to go into another endeavour?
It's all I've ever known. You know, I've loved the sport for a long time besides, you know, the down moments I had, but I've always stuck with it and it's something that I just always want to do, and I think coaching is something that I would really enjoy doing. And after coaching, I would quite be interested in becoming an agent, like a player representative, and getting into that, and like maybe the business side of sport. But yeah, just something I've always known, and why change what you enjoy? You know, if you really enjoy it, and you can see yourself making a good career out of it, and stick to it, I guess. So that's what I'm gonna look to do.
I suppose. You could choose a much easier lifestyle and a much less pressurized job, much less competitive. You probably by then made more money than what you need to. You're not just fancy chilling out and relaxing and taking it easy.
Nah, I don't think so. No, like in the position that I am at the moment, and probably for the rest of my career, I'm not going to make crazy money. Like I'm not at the top of the leagues, you know. So it's enough to like get by and be comfortable, but like it's not crazy. So like by the time I'm finished playing, I'm not going to be in that position to just put my feet up and be like, yeah, I'm good,
that's done,
I can retire. So I want to, but it's not just a money thing as well, it's just like I would want to do it regardless. Even if I was in a position where I could retire and I had enough money to do so, I would still want to be involved in the game.
You should enjoy it that much.
I do really enjoy it.
That's great after like you're 24-9, so it's 15 years, and you still have that desire and drive to be involved with the sport. That it's rare, I think. Most people in most industries spent 15 years in it, and they were like, "I wouldn't mind doing something else." It's admirable.
Yeah, I think I would like to do other things as well, not just solely focus on.
Have you ever had any other jobs outside of football or anything like that?
Yeah, they were terrible, but I did have them. I worked in Foot Asylum, the shoe store. And that was just terrible. I really didn't enjoy that at all. I also worked at the Marriott Hotel for maybe like a month. We done like basically catered weddings, and we just like clean up after people, and we get finished at like 3 a.m. And it was just like, I never want to do that ever again. So once I left those jobs, I was like, all right, I need to get back into football immediately. And then now I'm back in football. That is what motivates me. That's what keeps me going. I always think like if it's a cold day or if it's raining or something, I don't want to get up and train. I'm like, I don't want to do that again. I don't want to be back in that shoe store, or I don't want to be cleaning up after people after a wedding at 3 a.m. So, you know, it's an easy motivation, you know.
It's probably a 2 or 3 months. I don't know how long you spent there. So I was probably 2 or 3 months fairly well spent then, if it's going to give you the motivation to stay in your industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like at the time it was terrible, but like, now looking back on it, like it was something that
always valuable to have some crappy jobs, I think.
Definitely.
Great, well thanks very much. I think that's it for us. Cheers, man. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having us on. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Good.
That's it.